Hey everyone, welcome. Blind Less Live More Fall Sessions. This is our second live call together, and it's a huddles call on this beautiful Friday morning, evening, day. I don't know what it is. We got people all over the world. It's pretty amazing. And some people are celebrating Thanksgiving right now, and some people aren't. A lot, most of the world isn't. But anyway, it is getting that fallish, and it's like family time, even leading up to Christmas, and I think it's a great time for us to do this family dynamic role-playing we're going to do today. So, Dana, hey, how you doing?
Doing great. Yeah, it is that time of year. It's all emotions are sort of bent, I guess is a word. it's all right there. Lots of activity and sometimes frenetic energies going around, but we like to look at it as practice for speaking our truths and getting what we need and communicating. Hey guys, I can see Brent on the Skype and this little girl just came up, wanted some attention. Yeah, I just really looking at how, you know, sometimes we forget to communicate our needs clearly because we don't know what our own needs are. So we're going to do a couple exercises here. We will talk about the things that trigger us the most in our family, in our community, even our doctors, the things that trigger us. And really get clear on that. What triggers you and why. And we'll share that. We'll break you out into small groups of three and just share the thing that gets you the most, the trigger. And then we'll come back and break back into the small groups after and say, what would you rather them say to you than what they said? I know that we'll give you an example. But it's really important to know what you want to hear from them. Whether or not you get it is a completely different story, but knowing what you want to hear from them is the thing that you need to give yourself. So this will all be understood in an example. And then we're going to do something fun. We're going to open up the lines where we're going to do some role playing where you can share with Brent and me the things that you continue to get triggered by or things in your family dynamic, and we'll do some role playing and practice having a very strong voice and clear communication. It should be fun. Brent, you're back. Hi.
Hi. Yeah. Just okay. Look, you know, start the call, cue the interruption. You know, that's how it goes.
Sure. Precious interruption for sure. Mm-hmm. And we know that some people, you know, are with family right now. If you've carved out an hour with us, maybe we're going to actually keep this one short, hopefully like 45 minutes. Hopefully it'll shift your perspective a little bit when you go back in to hang out with them. So, Brent, did you hear all that when you were gone? We're going to break out into two sessions. First one is the thing that triggers you. Like, you know, there's probably a list of 50 things that trigger us, I mean, if I'm honest. But let's just pick one that's just on the...
Yeah, right now, what comes up? You think of that trigger. What's that first thing that comes up to you?
Yeah,
what's just really triggering you right now?
Well, just like the most recent thing that happened with a family member. It could even be a doctor. It could be, you know, if a doctor gave you the eye roll, whatever. You know, there can be lots of different things that trigger us. So I guess we'll do some quick examples, Brent. You know, I posted on Facebook a conversation that happened between my mother and myself the other night. I don't see family that often at all. So it's kind of changed to be honest, I never really had a huge family connection since I was a kid, but there's always that dynamic of trying to get me to do things. That's a sort of trigger in my family, and talking me out of my self-care or not believing. I know these are triggers that we all have. Like Brent, I'm the black sheep in the family. I'm not even a black sheep. It's just like an alien. It's like it's not even the same species. So I had some had an adjustment the other day, and the osteopath said, "I really want you to take it easy." He's like, "I just don't want you to have any conflict at all." He's like, "What's your Thanksgiving going to be about?" So, oh, right, okay, it's not going to be terribly restful. So anyway, I called my mom, and it was the typical thing of like, how could you? I've set this up, you know, blah, blah, blah. So I was really proud of myself because I stood there and held the space, and it was hard. I mean, in that moment, it's just like the aggression and the how could you, and then the guilt and, you know, and then the disappointment and all those layers were coming up. And I just learned to hold the space, meaning pause. The hardest thing to do is just to pause. And I just let her go off. She was going off. I mean, she was really going off. And I think what happens when you let someone talk, you don't quickly respond or defend. They tend to hear themselves more. You notice that, Brent? Like when you just hold the space and let them go off, they can actually hear what they're saying.
Yeah.
And so she's going on, I'm very quiet, and then I said, I understand. And then the other thing is to say, I know, so disappointed, I'm really sorry. Meet them where they are. I know this is hard, and I'm sorry. And I'm not coming. And I sort of had to repeat it over and over. So I got through that. And then I talked to my sister yesterday. And it was a triple layer. It was kind of amazing. She came in and said, what do you mean you're not coming? I'm here. I said, I know. I'm just really feeling, I'm feeling pretty, you know, I got a lot going on. And I really have to just balance everything with Limeless Live More. And just have these adjustments. And yeah, well, I'm tired too. I know. I'm so sorry you're tired. I know. I need to do this right now. And the key, Brent, was not to get into the specifics. The other thing is just like, I had this cranial work done and it's very delicate and all that. They're not going to get those things. What they get is yes and no. I mean, that's really how we have to leave it. So that's one of my current triggers is like, well, I'm tired too, and I've got a lot going on. And it's true. It's very, very true. But it doesn't mean that we can't listen to ourselves and we have very different systems, right? Very different. Like someone that's tired that's doing too much shopping or whatever compared to someone that's tired from doing laundry, you know, or someone's tired, you know, a family member's tired because they've been to too many parties, you know, et cetera. But again, having compassion for them because that's true, what they're going through, and having compassion for yourself. So I know, Brent, you've said to me things kind of mellowed out on your side a little bit.
It has. You know, really in this past year, it's been amazing. And you know, prepping, you know, before, talking before this call, it's like, where are all the things that triggers? Like, you know, they don't do all the things that they, I mean, they, you know, 10 years of getting it from them. And all of a sudden, like, literally this past year, it's, and I think right about a year ago, there was a pretty big shift where all of a sudden, it's almost, there was just like this underlying, this kind of silent acceptance that happened. And you know, it's kind of, it feels more like writing me off as black sheep. It's like, oh, we're just going to write them off right now. You know, it's like, it's kind of, oh, we're going to
write them off. But they're doing it with love. They're writing, you know, they're
doing it. There's a level of, I don't feel like resentment. There's a little bit, the deeper level of acceptance happening there, which is kind of great. You know, they stopped inviting me to things a lot, you know, but you know, it's, you know, it's not like a shunning thing. It's just like a, just kind of like a, hey, you know what? We don't really have the same interests, so it's, you know, it's not going to bother, you know, inviting you to this or that. So, and they all went to Pensacola, Florida this week, you know, and it's just kind of a, for like a little family
you're
get
always,
together.
You're always invited.
Well, I'm not really, you know, like they usually invite their friends and neighbors, and then like, and then it's like, oh, you know, it's a loose, it's very, it's not a, never a direct invitation. But anyway, yeah, you know, so, but we'll be getting together to do a little get together tomorrow with them. But you
know
the health stuff, the food stuff, that's really mellowed. I had to put a lot of boundaries over the years with my kids. And I think that also really woke them up a little bit. You know, that was really hard and heavy for a while, even to the point where I was like, you can't hang out with them if you don't like respect the gluten-free, sugar-free rules. So, I mean, there's been years of training them. But, again, more of an acceptance now. And the most of the things that come up trigger-wise, it's just around work, you know, is the work dynamic.
Your dad doesn't understand your quote unquote hobby of Limeless with more.
Yeah, he gets that. He definitely gets that. You know, well, this is what I really love to do. This is like, I mean, it keeps me alive, essentially. You know, make me feel like I have a place in the world. And it's like, you know, it's the immediate. Well, you know, we all. I mean, there's a lot of things I'd love to do. I'd rather do, but I can't do them. I haven't been able to do them in my life, so. That's just how it is. And it's that instant, like, no, stop. You're not allowed to do what you love to do or what you really want to do. You have to make sacrifices like I did. And then there's like, the guilt, shame thing. Like, it's just kind of, like, in there with it, right?
You know, we were talking about this the other day, Brent. You know, I really feel that parents in particular – they don't mean harm. They just know what they know. And there's some incredible blessing in there that is worth paying attention to. You know, your dad is very concerned about your sustainable future, your children, your health. That's beautiful. All that is beautiful, and that's really important. They may not understand the intricacies of what, you know, doing work that you love and how important that actually is to your health.
Yeah, the alignment.
But the concern is there, you know, and I think we need to appreciate that kind of thing. My dad has been... I mean, I haven't really spoken to my dad in 3 years. And one of the things he said to me in a horrible exchange we had, he said, get a job. First of all, he doesn't believe any of the health stuff, really. He thinks Klinghart's a whack and doesn't understand why I didn't do straight, you know, allopathic medicine, even though I did. He forgot that I did 15 doctors worth of that. But what I'm doing now is just letting him be fearful, and he says those things, and they're so rude, and he just doesn't understand at all. But the things I get triggered by are actually the things I want to change about myself. So when he said to me, get a job, this was years ago, it was like, you know what, he's right, I need a purpose. And, you know, Limeless with More happened. So there's something to it. It's something to the reason we get triggered is something inside of us agrees and also needs that. For example, Brent, you want to feel like you can support your kids better, and you know, so all those things, you're triggered by that because it's real for you.
Yeah.
So, I just kind of am learning to just, like, dissolve all the noise and just let them – I'm just learning to listen better. I think there's three reasons why people treat us the way they do. I think one is they don't get the illness, obviously. They just don't get it. I mean, here's the thing, Brentis. That's Brent's nickname, Brentis. We don't get the illness. Like, we don't get it. It's try to explain Lyme disease. We're all still figuring this out. It's not just Lyme disease. It's heavy metal. You know, it's the list goes on of all the things that this illness is. So how can we expect them to get it when sometimes our doctors don't even get it? So And we don't get it. Sometimes it looks like they don't care. I think it's kind of just inconvenient to be around a sick person sometimes. You know, it's just a drag. You know,
yeah.
Especially if you love that person. You love them so much and you just remember them well and you just want it to not be there, you know. It's really hard, and I think family members feel really helpless. And sometimes denial is a safe place. I mean, my mom, the denial is amazing. It's, like, actually amazing. It's like a boundary of just can't let that in. And I had an experience with her. She dropped by, and I ended up going to the store, and I had low blood sugar. Remember that, Brent? And
yeah.
My blood pressure dropped, and I lost speech, and she was sitting there going, oh, like she had never seen anything like that before. So, but what was interesting was when I was witnessing my mom witnessing what I was going through, it didn't make me feel better at all. Her knowing how bad it can get didn't help the situation at all. So if your relatives, if your loved ones, if your community actually knew how bad, it doesn't mean it would actually help. You know, I just watched the panic in her face. So that's just something interesting to look at. And also the other thing, I don't know if you've, says Brent, what I've noticed, if you really do start talking about the details and the horror of it, they start kind of like squirming in their chairs a little bit, because I noticed this with my dad years ago. It's sort of like it reminds them of their own mortality and their own lack of attention.
I can just picture like those moments, and it's happened not once, not twice, but like almost every time you kind of get into it a little bit. They'll start with like the surface level, trying to give you some advice, or you should do this, and then when you launch into like the reality of it, just the stone blank look on the face I get, like picture my dad's face, like just that, and it is like you just said, it's like literally like you see like they
he's
are witnessing
with
their
like,
mortality.
You know, he's sitting there
like
with
thinking
like
of
a
their
drink
parents,
in a...
or yeah, they're thinking of like their other family members who've died. You know, it's like it's all hits them. You know, pretty strong.
And then it's the reality of their child. You know, it's terrifying. I mean, it really is. It's for I think for a family member, and I know I can't stand it if someone I love is not well. I'd rather it be me, because I cannot handle that. I just go way too much of an empath, and I just want to fix it and make it better. And so we got to remember what it's like to be around someone that's ill. What's beautiful with Lyme-less live more is Brent and I have had the experience being around each other when we're dipping or we're going through certain symptoms.
Right.
And some of you have heard this before, but it's funny. It's funny when two people, it's not funny at all, but it's interesting when two people are symptomatic at the same time. It's like
I'm trying to hit deadlines.
compassion kind of goes out the window. It's like, you know, you've got a migraine, my body hurts all over. Okay, tough crap, let's go, let's keep moving.
yeah you're preaching to the choir here. Yeah, right.
Preaching to the choir, buddy.
Give it to someone else.
Yeah. So
No, Dana, I want to say something. I mean, it's just what you said earlier on this call. It's just really landing on me now. It's just really landing now. The piece where you said they just need to feel, or they just need to feel heard. Really, they need to hear themselves say it. And I think for my own family shift a year ago, especially with my dad, was we had a moment where he sat me. That was right about this time last year. He sat me down and he was like, and he like kind of. He really wants me to take over his company, his company. And, you know, he made me an offer for it. And he's like, all right, here it is. And you can take it or leave it. I don't care. But at least I did everything I could to do something for you. And then, you know, I didn't take it. I didn't want it. But after he felt heard, he could say his piece. That's when everything has become peaceful, truly. And he's like, he's felt like he's done, not that all he can do is throw his hands up, it's just, but it's like he's, you know, he's felt heard, essentially, in his own way that he needed that time, he felt heard.
And what a beautiful thing for you to listen.
And I listened. I let him speak it. I didn't fight him. I didn't push back. I didn't, like, you know.
You didn't get defensive, like, you don't know me.
No.
The most beautiful thing is to say, wow, that is so
I was grateful.
Generous and loving of you to do that. It's just not where I am. I really appreciate you caring for me. You know, and that could be the littlest things, like my mom yelling at me the other night. It's like, yeah, Mom, I know how hard it is. How hard, you're in your late 70s and you're bringing all these people together. God, I know. And all you wanted was to see me. I'm so sorry, and I'm disappointed too. So, yeah, I mean, I think really acknowledging where they are, and that's beautiful.
Well,
I know your dad.
Yeah.
To let go some more because you weren't fighting.
Yeah.
And, you know, with that, I just want to say one thing that might be helpful, and it's really, really hard to do when you're already triggered. I mean, it's like nearly impossible. But if you're going into a family situation or a community situation or a best friend, whatever it is, and you're having a horrible, horrible day, and you know, the day before you were really great playing board games and you were totally on, but the next day you're completely hungover and pain-ridden or whatever. I think it's really best to tell that family member in advance, I love you, just right there, if that's something that you're comfortable with. I love you. I'm having a really, really hard day. I don't need you to fix it. I really know how to take care of myself. I've been doing this a long time. But please don't take anything personally that I do. My tone might be up and down. Because that's the other thing we don't realize. Tone and body language when you're sick is not inviting. It's like it puts other people in defense mode. Is that making sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, you're hurting such a big truth right here. Keep going.
So, please don't take my ups and downs personally, and I'll do the same with you. There's nothing you can really do other than, you know, holding the space, and your love is really the best medicine. So let's just communicate today. And it really lets everyone off the hook. Say, Brent?
Well, adding to that, you know, I've noticed this is something that I do, you know, and sometimes, you know, we want other people to understand so much that we don't feel well, we skip that part of saying, like right up front, out the gate, look, I'm having a hard day today, you know, this is one of my off days. But instead, sometimes, instead of just like saying it and being like kind of vulnerable and authentic in that moment to them, I just kind of like show them more that I don't feel good. You kind of almost act out. I don't feel good more.
Who is that them? Who is that them you're speaking of?
That them?
Yeah, who is that them?
A few people in my life. A few times.
Your business partner? Perhaps.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
It may have happened. But even in the work environment that I go to, you know, the work I do, just to make ends meet, and you know that. Instead of like kind of being a little mopey and like I don't feel it's like making them see it, and so they understand. Like, what if we could just right off the gate like state it, hey, this is how I'm feeling, but I'm going to make the best out of like being here. And like your spirits can lift in that moment. They cannot feel uncomfortable about, you know, not knowing how you feel, what version of this person am I getting today, right?
Yeah.
Come right out the gate with it. I think that's, it all of a sudden opens up for a possibility for a much better meeting, you know, talk situation.
And,
you know,
and it's,
moment.
You, that's exactly it. And it's before you are both triggered. So if there's
no
a way
resentment.
You can do it, if you, I mean, and I was bringing up the example between you and I, Brent. You wouldn't believe the stuff that we go through over Skype. It's amazing. We've become family. And you were having a man cold, and you were having lots of stresses, and but I was also going through, you know, when we stress, the symptoms go way up. We're just like you. I mean, not sleeping enough and pushing hard, and, you know, I'm feeling pain, but Brent was having a cold, and you just had this edge. And by the end of the conversation, we were like, okay, we need a break. Let's hang up. And then you came back and you said, I'm sorry. I'm feeling really bad today, and I know I have an edge. Just, you know, and it's really, really important to claim that and take responsibility for it. And I've attempted in many, many situations, like I said, tell them right off the bat, like, today is a bad day for me.
I got a temper.
What?
It's like, I got a temper today, you know, but, and it's amazing, like, when you do say it, like you're saying right now, how almost, it almost dissolves even how you were feeling. It almost is a cure in itself, or a little bit.
Yeah.
It takes the edge off, in a sense, or at least the emotional component of that edge that you might even be heightened with certain people.
Right, and just release them from thinking that there's anything that they can do to help you. Or you can
they don't
tell
have
them
to fix it, and they're not responsible for it.
And you tell them, you know, very specifically, not general. I think it's really important to say, you know, I got this. I know how to handle it. You know, let's just deal, bear with me today. You know, if you could help vacuum, that would help me tremendously. You know, if you could just take that off my list today, that would be a great help. If you can give someone specifics of what you need help with, they're not going to really help you with your protocol. You know, maybe they will, but you've got the things that you know how to do. But the other life stuff, like, can you go to the store for me or any of those things, that's really important.
So huge.
Specifics. So huge. Okay, so we want you to break into your groups. Wow, that went really quick, guys. We want you to break into your groups and just share really quickly. Let's just establish a thing that's triggering you right now. Let's just get that out. And then each person shares a recent trigger. And then we'll come back. And then we'll talk about what we needed from them. So, Brent, you're going to break them into groups of three?
Yeah. You want to do groups of three? Okay. Okay. Do groups of
groups
three.
Groups of two is fine, too.
Two groups of three. Let's try groups of two this time. I'm kind of feeling
yeah.
two. Let's give it a try. We've
yeah.
never done two before.
We
if
were going to do two.
I would like to say real quick, if anybody does not want to break into a group of two and talk to someone, or if it's too noisy, you're not a place you can do it, press three on your phone right now, and I won't put you in a group. So press three if you do not want to be in a group of two. Otherwise, I'm going to give you a second to do it here, and then I'm going to, and then you just please wait, you know, from the side on hold in the silence, and then we'll break back into big groups, and you won't miss anything. Just be patient in the interim while we all do our meeting group thing. All right. Go ahead, Dana, what were you saying?
That's it. Just share the things that have triggered you lately. Share one thing.
Okay, hold on
specifically around the holidays.
Hold on, guys. Groups.
issues?
Hold on, I gotta get all ready here. Okay, everyone's in your group, and hold on one sec. And you guys can begin. All right, you're in your groups, groups of two, and introduce yourself. And like we said, you know, go over what's triggering you right now, and please avoid the backstory. You know, if you can, your whole history. Just get right into what's triggering you right now, and we're going to take about how long can we do, Dana?
We do a minute each.
We'll just do about 4 minutes here, okay? So about 5 minutes. 5 minutes. We'll do 5 minutes, you guys.
Start with the first letter in the alphabet.
Yeah. Okay. Back in five. All right, everyone. We're going to come back to the big group now. Sorry to interrupt if you're in the middle of talking. I'm going to mute everyone's lines real quick. We're going to get back in our group, so don't worry. Do not worry. All right, Dana, what's the next step?
I think the most important thing is to figure out what it is that we would love them to say to us instead of the thing they are saying. An example, just off the top, you know, I'd rather my mom or sister say, you know, you need to take care of yourself. Don't worry about us. Do what you need to do. You know your body best. That's really what I want to hear them say when I say, I'm sorry, I can't make it tonight. I'm too tired. And they argue me and they, you know, go off on me. I'd rather them say, take care of yourself. So I think that's really important to figure out what you want to hear from them, because that's the thing you need to stand in for yourself. So I made that commitment before I talked to my mom. I need to take care of myself and listen to my body, and this is what my body's saying. And nothing's going to move me from this place. So I think it's important that we figure out what that is. So Brent, let's say with your dad, what did you want him to say to you about the situation?
You know, it's all down to just wanting to feel understood, and it's like, and really, it's just like, yeah, you can do it. You can go for it, man. You can go for it and do it. That would be, I mean, who doesn't want to hear that, right? Especially like,
okay,
only, like, go for the dream, you know? And it's like, yeah, man, yeah, heck yeah, do it, go for it, you know? Sounds amazing. I wish I could have done that. And you know, it's awesome that you have an opportunity to do it. Like,
but the thing is, the more I've noticed, the more you just settle into it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
The more he's responding. So that's the whole the key here. So let's do that. Let's talk about what it is you want to hear your loved one say to you. And you know, I want to just add here that it's no joke. People are in abusive relationships too. And that is should not be tolerated. But more and more that you gather yourself and stand in your truth and what you need, the more they will respond. And the more, if they don't respond, the more power you will have in yourself to get out of that situation. So let's just do that really quickly.
All right, we'll take another 5 minutes, guys. Put you in your groups. Hold on one second. All right, your lines are unmuted now, and you can get back to talking amongst yourselves. Dana, hold on one sec, okay? 5 minutes, guys. Okay, everyone, we're going to break back into our large group again. Unmute everyone's lines. Hold on one sec. Thank you, everyone who shared. I mean, I know at some point, I know while you're getting your conversation, you keep on rolling. And boy, the show must go on. Thank you, everyone, for sharing. I think it's so amazing.
And yeah, something wonderful just happened. Mark Weil just popped in on the call. Hi, Mark from New York.
Hello, Brent and Dana. I finally woke up. I've been working all night.
When you say working all night, you really mean working until morning.
I was working until about 9 a.m. I worked about 12 hours straight and crashed and woke up in time to get to part of the call.
Wowie. Wow. Oh, you're an inspiration there. So, Mark, what we've been talking about here is just figuring out ways to stand strong in yourself and what you need as an ill person. And we talked about how, you know, it's not easy on the family members either. And I think we tend to think that family members are mind readers and they should know that we need help, or they should know that we're feeling lonely, or they should know we're in pain. So we're talking about being really clear in our communication, like, hey, today I'm having a bad day. You know, it's not about you. I love you. What could really help me today is A, B, and C. You know, can you help me do the vacuuming? Or, you know, I think instead of walking around resentful, I think it's a lot of us tend to do, you know, unconsciously. And the other thing I want to just quickly touch on is, you know, how people, I'm sure we've all had a family member say, you know, you need to take your mind off it. You need to just have more fun, or you're just, you know, they trivialize it. And
uh-huh.
I think they're so well-meaning, but, you know, when they say, oh, it's so much of it's in your head, I think to some degree they're right. Now let me, like, illustrate this. When we get upset or emotionally broken in any way, as you've taught so well, Mark, our immune system and our HPA axis starts to cascade down. So what's different from a normal person that has stress or emotional stress, they have reserves. When we get stressed or emotional, we break down and bugs start growing and we get terribly symptomatic. So to the person watching us, we get upset and emotional and then the symptoms go crazy. Now that's a real physiological thing that's happening there. But they see emotions equal sickness, it's in your head. You follow me on that?
Completely.
So,
and then what they do is they're basically casting blame. They're saying, okay, if you just had a different attitude or didn't worry about it or whatever their projection is, they will say that.
Yeah.
And what they forget is that any thoughts have an effect on us biochemically, for all of us. It doesn't matter whether you have Lyme or not, but if you don't have any reserve, as you said, Dana, then the effects are almost catastrophic.
They really are.
And people,
I mean,
and people that have those thoughts that are relatively healthy don't understand that because they think, well, just get your attitude right, you'll be fine.
Get your attitude right, bounce back, have a cocktail, distract yourself, you know, all the things. No, really, those are all the things
numb
that
out.
They numb out.
Yeah.
They have the luxury of doing that. We don't have the luxury of numbing out. We can't, I mean, a lot of us can't drink, can't go under, can't stop for a minute on thinking about our protocols. So what's interesting is to watch from their perspective. They see us get emotionally upset, and then they see us symptomatic, and they say, oh, it's in your head. Well,
uh-huh.
The emotions are there, but we don't have the reserves, and then we become symptomatic. You know, it's amazing, Mark. You've helped me understand this. You know, if I go too long with work, don't eat or whatever, and I have particular emotional stresses, my viral load goes off the charts. I mean, in a hurry. I mean, this isn't something slow. This is like, you know, I can be having a good day, and then by the end of it, I'm a mess. So people, loved ones, society, doctors, everyone, they don't, well, the doctors hopefully know this, but they don't understand this. So I mean, I think if the person's open, you can try to explain to them that I don't have the same reserves. And, you know, even friends will say, oh, come on, come out and have a drink, you know. Come out and, you know, play or whatever. They just don't understand. So,
And I'm going to add one thing just because I live with someone that is clean and sober 17 years. I don't tend to drink just because I don't like how it makes me feel. I don't feel sick, but I don't have the energy to do what I want to do. And one thing that we notice when we're watching any kind of show, TV or movie, whenever somebody's under stress, what do? They sit down and have a drink. And I'm always thinking, and this is what my brain does, and I know I'm weird. So I think, wow, you're under a lot of stress. Something terrible happened in the TV show, in the movie. And the role model is, just have a drink. And I'm like, wow, that is the worst time to do that. That's for a normal, healthy person. Because it's like, wow, it's not going to make me think any better. It's not going to make me feel any better. But quote, unquote, it relaxes. I don't think it does. But for those people, so I'm saying this is a role model everywhere. Everyone sees this. Have a glass of wine and chill out. And I'm like, okay, what if that's not accurate? But it's put out to everyone like it is the way people should react. And I just don't understand. I get that it's real, but I know that it doesn't work even for the people that are quote-unquote well, but that's what they decide. So, of course, they'll project it on the sick people. It's like, oh, you're just obsessing about your feelings and your body. It's like, well, what if we're not? What if we're aware and everybody else is just trying to numb out?
Right. What if were they awake ones? You're all, you know, a lot of times they're asleep. I mean, I actually don't mind it if somebody in my family that's a pain in the butt and starts drinking a little bit. Then it takes the edge off of them and I get a little break. But yeah, I hear you. It's in our society. It's everywhere. So Mark, we've already been an hour, so we want to get some people on the line here and do a little role playing and see if we can practice. So what we did was we shared some things that recently have triggered us. For example, Mark, my mom yelled at me for not being able to make it to Thanksgiving. So getting clear on what I would rather her have said, I think, is really important so I know how to take care of myself. So what I'd rather hear her say is, do whatever you need to do, you know your body. So instead of expecting her to say that to me, I'm saying it to myself before I even get on the phone with her. So we're going to try that with some people. Brent, how do they raise their hands?
If you'd like to raise your hand to come on live with us right now, press 2 on your phone. Press 2, and I'll see your hand raised, and we'll get you on the line with us. And we'll have a little fun.
Yeah, just share like a recent trigger, and let's see if we can figure out how to stand strong in it.
Here we go. Hello, Vivian, you're on the line.
Yeah, hello. So,
hi, Vivian.
Yeah, hi. So it's a bit new for me. So a recent trigger, I have to share it. It's a bit late here, so I'm a bit like line brain going, downhill. So,
You're in Australia?
No, I'm in the Netherlands. My partner has left me. He's in Australia. My trigger mainly is, I guess, that, when someone in my environment gets really down or like it's feeling really sick, like it instantly affects me. Like that's my trigger, like, and I don't know how to get away from that. I find it really difficult because I really love to help people. I can't really help myself, I don't know. And I really love to help other people, and yeah, it just instantly it affects me still. So that's my trigger, I guess.
Wait, Vivian, did you say when somebody's being, I missed that part for some reason, I couldn't hear, when someone's being aggressive or?
When someone is feeling really like sick or sad or like is having issues, problems and stuff like that, I can't really get away from that. Like I really like suck in all that energy and just like, I can't get away from like that energy, like their energy field, or like when someone's feeling sick, I really want to help them, and I guess I'm not sure if that's what you mean, but that's something that always triggers me, I guess, and then I just like go symptomatic.
Sounds like you take on some of the pain there.
Yeah.
On top of your own overwhelm. So
yeah, I'm not sure. Yeah.
So what would you rather that person talk to you about? If they're saying, "Oh my God, my life is horrible. I'm terribly ill. I'm exhausted." You feel like saying, "Oh, really? Join the club." It's not that you. It's like you're finding it hard to be compassionate.
No,
is that
it's
true?
More like I'm like too compassionate, I guess. I just really like when there's negative energy, like I just like it, I draw it in. Like it gets, I can't like put an energy field up and like, okay, I'm not gonna have this today, because I can't. It always gets in anyway. Or maybe I'm not clear enough, so maybe you should ask someone else.
No, I understand it. No,
yeah.
I think it's like the curse part of being an empath, sort of absorbing your environment. Well, there's lots of things you can do there. You know, tapping is amazing, and putting up a boundary is, you know, you got to tell them, I know my nervous system can't handle this.
Yeah.
I don't always get it, but, you know, anything you want to say to that, Mark, about feeling in a really vulnerable state and then having a negative energy around?
Well, I would say, and this is my own disease, so I'm speaking from a disease codependent point of view, I think anyone that professionally does helping, that could include teachers and the executive assistants as well as medical people, I tend to have a codependent personality. So when someone's in a difficult place, I always feel like I'm going to jump in and help. That's just what I do.
Yeah.
And the problem for me is that in many cases I've ignored myself, because you know, it just automatically puts me into a place mentally and emotionally where, what can I do? What can I do? What can I do? And my body could have been saying, you need to rest. You need to not get in the middle of this. My body could have said any number of things, but as soon as I hear somebody in pain or somebody having difficulty, somehow my brain just says, I've got to do something. And the reality is, it doesn't do me a damn bit of good, because number one, I'm probably pushing myself too far. And number two, I clearly am no longer thinking about myself. I'm no longer aware, self-aware to say, you know what, I reached a limit. And I'm not saying that that's true for everyone, but for me it is, and I know that I've got a problem with it. So that's why I have to delineate when I can work, when I can't. And mostly what I have to do is sit there and be willing to listen to people and not try and fix. And it is very hard for my personality. It's almost impossible for my personality. Yeah.
Yeah, same. So, yeah, I find it. Yeah, I'm not sure if you can hear me. the same, especially for people who are, like, really, close to your heart. That's the most difficult thing for me. Like, my mother is really sick, and we've been through a lot together, and I'm about to move overseas, and I don't want to leave her. And that's one thing, I guess, that's really holding us both back. But like, we really support each other, but as well, we maybe hold each other back in a way, because we love each other so much. But we both can't. It's a really weird, I guess, difficult place to be, even though it's so beautiful, like we're really, really close. But that's hard sometimes for the both of us, I guess. Boundaries, I guess.
I don't think you're alone in that. I think that so many people have that, and I've done work in CODA because I know that I'm that way. So I'm just saying that join the club. And learn to, obviously, this is to all the people that are ill, you got to learn to put yourself first. That doesn't mean if someone's burned and you need to take them to the hospital, you don't take them to the hospital. I'm talking about a lot of times we just hear somebody in a lot of emotional pain and we feel like we have to do something, and then we ignore ourselves. So I'm saying, you know, make it a priority to make yourself number one. It's hard to do. It's still hard for me every day.
Yeah.
I usually feel sad or guilty that I'm not doing something for someone.
Yeah.
You know, it's such an important topic. Vivian, now I wasn't clear on what you were saying at the beginning. Now I'm really understanding that you're being an empath and you're feeling the pain and taking it on. And, you know, empaths are amazing, as Mark just said. You know, I've tried to explain this before in my experience, an empath in a healthy state with healthy boundaries is the best healer imaginable, because you can feel the pain. You feel that pain, but you're able to just hold the space and know that whatever your loved one is going through, their pain is what is teaching them. So you can look at it like, wow, this is the universe sort of unfolding and all this stuff has to happen, because we're wounded healers, and those wounds are what woke us up to make us healers. So if you can, in your healthy state with good boundaries, you're holding the space of love and strength for your loved ones while taking care of yourself, as Mark said so beautifully. But when you're in the unhealthy version of that, as Mark said, you become so codependent that you actually need them. You feel their pain, so you need to go out there and fix them so you feel better. Because, you know, and it's like you can't separate your lives. You can't separate your energy fields. And it's, believe me, I know, it's exhausting. But again, it just means you can step into a healer mode of that in the healthy, and just know that often people need their pain to learn, you know, don't ever step away from the love, but give your love to yourself first. I hope that all makes sense.
Yeah, it does. But it's difficult, like Mark said. It's just like so difficult. Thank you.
I know. You're doing a great job. So you want to, Brent, I see you signaling me. Oh, wow, we're running.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Vivian. And my other Vivian just walked in. She's got her hands on her hips, giving me a stop.
Hi, Vivian.
There's my little Vivian.
Hi.
All right, I'll be down. Just
okay, we'll take one more. One more, Brent?
Yeah, we're going to do another here. Let's see. We got Cynthia. You're on the line?
Yes, I am.
Hey there.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, hi.
Hi. Thanks, you guys, for everything you do. So are you wanting something that's triggered me right now, or?
Sure. I mean, maybe what's triggered you and what you wished, what you were really looking for from the person that triggered you. What would you rather them say?
Validation. That it's real. I overheard a conversation between my parents, and my father was saying that he didn't believe that I was sick, and that basically I was faking it, and that I've made him go broke, and it's not the case. He's never managed his money well, but it hurt. I went in and I said, I just can't even believe what I just heard. And it's weird dynamics. It's kind of, I need to move. I'm going to be moving soon, but because I was divorced 10 years ago and raised all my kids, but when I got really, really ill and had a collapse, and I wanted my kids all to be together, so I sent them to their father. And I lost that identity as a mother. And so now when they come to see me, my parents act like they're coming to see them, and they take over that mother role for me now. Like, I'm invisible. So this disease is, like, so invisible in so many ways. You know?
That is so painful, that hearing that conversation.
Yeah. It just totally, And I had a sister pass away this past year in March of MS, and I kind of think she had Lyme, but, you know, and she got treated so differently. But she was married, and I told the girl that I was speaking with about this, because he would never dare talk to her that way, because her husband would protect her, you know. And I don't have a husband that is would protect me right now, although my, my children would. But they're not here all the time.
It's the hardest thing to stand there and protect yourself, you know. It's so hard, especially with family. But you need to validate you.
It's this functional, it's like this triangle relationship. And I recently have found out that I was abused sexually by him. He doesn't know I know this. I was very young, but and I was sexually abused by another family member when I was like 9. And I've always wondered why he would never validate that. He's never said, I'm sorry that happened, I'm sorry. And so sometimes I feel like he's kind of mean to me because he's projecting how he feels about himself onto me. He's mad at himself. And so and he's projecting that to me, making me feel like I'm the one that was the cause of it. Or, you know, that type of a thing. I'm the one that's spending the money, which I'm not spending much of his money. So, like I was saying, I'm trying to move, and I probably will be moving. I just got so many things to try to
In that moment, Cynthia, when you are having conversations with him and you have to be around him, it sounds like it's probably really good for you to get where you need to be and move or whatever, but are you able to, without defenses, stand up for yourself and say, you know, okay, so let's do a little role playing. So, Cynthia, you know, I'm just really, you know, you're just spending all of my money. I'm being your dad right now. I'm just making it up, okay? I mean, really, I mean, Lyme disease is you know, I read an article, and it doesn't really exist. And you know, I think you just are still sad from the divorce, and I think you just need to just like, you know, pull yourself up from your bootstraps and get over this. You know, I think you need to, you know, you're just spending all my money, and you know, I'm tired of it, and so.
Yes, and he would also.
So I want to hear you respond. I want to hear you respond
with the money part. Well, when I went in and I said, I cannot believe what I just overheard. The fact that you do not believe I am sick. And then that went on to a different conversation about, well, how is it that you can drive to your treatments? And because the first 2 years, I had a really good support system. They've all dwindled away, as we all know they do. And I shouldn't be driving. I float. I shouldn't be. It's not good. But they can't drive me either. And I have to go. And so I just do it. But he thinks, how is it that you can have the energy to drive if you're so sick? And I said, well, it's not good. It's not helpful for the illness. And then so he tried to really get off of the broke thing fast. And I said about that, because we went to our church leaders about getting some help. And when they, the first time they said to him, is $500 a month enough? And he said, yes. Yeah. And I said to him, why did you not say at that point, no, I need more. That is her insurance premium. That eats that. So there's no other money for treatment, doctor bills. You know, I've had a lot of generous friends.
So, Cynthia, you just, let's, I know there's just so much to all this, and I'm so sorry about all the layers. I think I'm glad you called them out on it. I think you just need to work really hard to just not try to convince them that you're sick. If they're not open, if they're not open, you're never going to convince them, and trying to will only exhaust you. And then it puts the power in their hands. And so just say, I don't need you to understand, but I do need you to treat me this way. And so...
Yeah, there's the boundary right there. And you know what? In the first time, a lot of the things saying
say
here... Okay, go ahead, Dana.
I just didn't hear Dana exactly what she said, that the boundary thing. I just wanted to hear that again, but...
You know, I think it's just important that you say to him, you stop. I think what's happening is you're spiraling out and you're getting really entangled with him. So
yes,
just say,
it is,
you know,
a triangle.
This is very painful, and I don't, this is a very mysterious disease. I don't expect you to understand, but I do expect you to give me respect. If you can't do that, we can no longer communicate.
Okay. Yeah.
So
I want to add to that, you know, and we're going to come off this call and it's like, okay, you know, I feel empowered and like, okay, I'm going to like, you know, not stand up, but I'm going to put my boundaries or speak my truth to my family. And here's the thing too, like, you have to give it a try. You have to, you know, give it a go, but then also know that, you know, it's going to take more than one time. It's going to...
Right.
You know, like, this is going to break the ice, and then it's going to, like, you have to do it again, and you have to do it again, and keep doing it, because they still kind of see this old version of you. But then if you keep doing it, be consistent, and, like, this is my boundary, just exactly the way Danny was saying, and then it eventually will take. It eventually, they'll start to see you in that new way, and they'll just kind of still need reminding over and over again for some time. But then things will start to shift. It won't be an immediate
fix. Although
he's
84 and my mom's 82, you know, a bit hard to change at that age. But it's always been this triangle. I'm the middle child of five, and it's been me and between my mom and dad all the time. They use me against each other. They pit me. And since my kids have gone, it's just gotten worse. But and another reason why I need to move is that the basement I live in is full of mold. And I just have been told, you're never going to get better in that mold, ever. So
you've got some decisions to make there, Cynthia. I think you can see it, and I think you just need to step into it all. And, you know, when your parents are that age, if I were you, I would just let them go on and on, just let them talk.
Yeah.
And no, it's not a disrespectful thing. It's that they're set in their ways, and I think you just... let them talk and don't say anything.
Right.
It's like a really powerful thing to do.
I think you said it earlier, or one of you said it, I don't know, or somebody said it, the fact that because he is as old as he is, he wants to be the one that's sick and gets all the attention, and it bugs him, you know, because it's taking the attention from him because he's getting older, and he just wants all the attention on him, not me.
Well,
so
give him some attention and put up your boundaries. I think you know what you're doing. You're doing a good job. So
yeah.
I don't know. I think we gotta.
I caretake them more than I should, and that, you know, that's a problem too. So
don't let yourself go down with the ship.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm an empath too, so that's a problem. But thank you. Thank
okay.
you for that advice.
Okay.
I loved it.
Good luck to you. We'll see you in there. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Cynthia.
Thank you. Oh, I think we went over. Are you still there, Mark? How you doing with all this?
I'm listening. I will add one piece just so people can understand it. I've spent a lot of time in the last 5-6 years looking at brain chemistry. And one of the things that I want to remind people is that as we get older or we get ill, certain parts of our brain don't work the way they used to work. So when I would be talking to my elderly parents when they were still alive, I kept thinking, well, this was the person I used to talk to when they were younger. And I have to accept that some parts of their brain are not functioning at the level that I'd like them to function at. And then I just had to surrender that Danny, you said it, you'll never get through to some of these people. It doesn't mean you don't love them. It doesn't mean you don't connect with them. It doesn't mean you don't care about them. But having them understand, sometimes I have to just go, nope, they won't. And that's very hard. It's sad, and it's uncomfortable, but it's a reality. So I just
it
had to
reality.
Learn to surrender to that.
I mean, I just had that experience with my dad where we hadn't talked in 3 years. I went to a family reunion, and I walked in the door, and I saw my uncle, my dad, and my aunt all walking in a pack, and I thought, oh, my gosh, they're so old. They're so much older, and I had so much compassion for them that it's okay. I don't need to convince them. It's too much of a stretch for where they are in their thinking. And I just kind of decided to meet them where they are with humor and just, you know, humor is usually the bridge. It really
always.
Is. Always.
You can't go wrong with that. You can't. You just, you know what, just go, just default back to, like, laughing and telling some jokes.
Yeah. That's meant. Do we have any more people? I think we could probably.
You want
to
do one more?
If people are tired on the call, don't worry if you have to drop off. So.
Yeah, okay, well, we have another, like, fast hand up here. Let's get her here. Nancy's on the line.
Hello.
Nancy, hi.
Yes, hello. So hey. I have a little easy way to explain what I'm going through is the Brené Brown little clip on empathy with the cartoon. Have you all seen that?
Yes, we're familiar.
You know, so like when I'm in the hole and the deer looks down and says, well, at least you have a child, you know, that's how my family is. And that's what they're like, I'm not going to get it from them. And why am I trying to? And that's what I've been learning through all of this.
Mm-hmm.
So I told my partner that I was talking to, at breakout, excuse me, I just said, I love that clip. And what I do is I monitor myself. And if they text me and say, thank God for texting, they said, can we talk? I'll check in with my energy and what's going on. And if I can't, then I'll say, I just don't have the energy right now. And then I'll just call them when I can because they don't think I'm sick. Even though they were around me when I had a horrible episode.
Yeah.
But so what I found through all this is surrounding myself with a new family that cares about me and not my family of origin.
Is this Nancy? Is that who this is?
Yeah, yes. Nancy.
Mm-hmm. You know, Nancy, too. Yeah. I mean, again, don't think that you're going to get anything from them. And if someone says to you, well, at least you have a roof over your head. Well, you know what?
Yeah, I know.
They're right. I mean, they're right. Like, it's okay.
Yeah.
It's okay to agree with them. It's like, you know what? You're right. I have running water. I have a roof over my head. I'm in pain and I feel sick a lot of my life, but I do have those things. And then take your real hurt and bring it to Mindless with More and let's talk about it in our circle because you're not going to get anywhere. With
oh, yeah.
And they just want to feel better. They feel helpless. And they just want look on the bright side, you know. It's just they want to get out of the conversation. I've noticed that a lot. People are like, okay, I'm really uncomfortable. There's nothing I can do. You're scaring me about my own health. Let's talk about the weather. So just be cool with that. And I would just agree.
Oh, totally.
I would agree with them. Like, yep. And then take all the hurt and write it down and bring it to the group and we'll work it out.
Yeah, that's why I love that Brené Brown piece. It just helps me a lot.
Awesome.
And the little snippet that I don't like, and I'm fairly neutral, but when I'm down and out, I'm not neutral, is, but you look good.
Well, you know what? It's true.
You look so good.
I mean, here's the thing. It's. But wait a second, like, because we've all had that. That was sort of my role in that film, Under Our Skin. Is my body looks like it's black tar inside. That's what it felt like, you know, just like burning ash tar. And they're like, you look great. Your skin's amazing. Wow, your hair, you know, it's like, oh, really? But if that's all they can say to you, you know, it's okay. It's true. I mean, really, we should be grateful for that. It's hard because we don't want to our outside to match our inside, do we?
No,
we'd scare people. We'd be zombie monsters.
Zombies.
So. I'd be Halloween 24/7.
Exactly. So.
It's good that we don't always show it.
That's right. Thank you for all you do.
Well, thank you
Thanks,
for joining
Nancy.
Us. Thank you, Nancy. Thanks, everyone,
okay.
for hanging on.
Okay.
Yeah. And
Dana.
Yeah,
Dana Brent, can I add one thing? Because a lot of my
of
the people that I see, a lot of my practice are people that don't have Lyme, but they've had simple things like a slip and fall or a car accident. And the common thing that everybody has, Dana, you address this really directly, is if you don't have blood spurting out and if you're just shaken up, people are like, well, you look fine. Well, the problem is many things can look good on the outside, but the person's experience on the inside is really devastating. And the other thing you said, and I think this is the bigger issue for people, is everybody doesn't want to feel how vulnerable they are to how they could be shaken up or not doing well in a second. So what they want to do is they want to fix you because it makes them uncomfortable just to think. It reminds them that they're human and that they could be vulnerable right away. So they want you to shake it off so that they don't have to feel like, well, as being Jewish, there but for the sake of God, go I. In other words, I could be that person. A lot of people want to just push you out of it because then maybe they would feel safe too. And it doesn't work. We know that. But they'll project that onto everyone.
Yeah. So true. And that's okay. You know, it's like we keep saying over and over, find your safe group to go into these deeper levels and you know, feel safe and understood. And yeah, I mean, I think too what happens, I know, in my experience is just 15, 20 years of being ill, you just can't have a frown on your face that whole time. You just learn how to carry pain with you, and people think that you carry it so well, they think you're healthy, but it's a matter of how you carry it too, and that's just because we're veterans and we've been through it. So thank you for sharing, Mark, and thank you everyone for sticking with us an hour and a half. Wow.
Yeah, you know, we said 40. We're going to shoot for 45.
We're like 45 minutes. Sorry.
But there's just so much to say. What really stood out for me is when they kind of recap, you know, some of the things you said, Dana, is that, you know, so many people, I mean, it's the kind of common theme that I keep hearing in this call and that you said is like, is this, we want to feel more understood from them. They want to feel more understood because, I mean, they do have some wisdom. Other people you're talking to have some wisdom, some life experiences. What are they saying? Oftentimes it's true what they're saying, but then in that moment, maybe it's not matching what we're saying. So let's always stay open. Let's listen to each other. Let's understand. Let's be more aware. Let's not all try to be right all the time. Let's have our boundaries and say what we need going into the conversation rather than saving it for the end or trying to show it. So all these things, moving into more holidays coming up and it's family time of year. So it's just so much to walk away with. So thanks, Dana.
Thanks for recapping, Brent. That's awesome. Thank you, Mark, for joining us. And gosh, guys, you know, we've got a couple more weeks ahead here on this program. So fun. More good foods. We're moving into more of the anti-parasitic stuff. We have Anne Louise Gittleman coming on. Mark, we had a great, great interview with her. Man, she's been around. I mean, she's a pioneer, that one. I'm sure you're familiar, Mark, with Anne Louise.
I am. I've heard her lecture a couple of times in person.
She's awesome. She's really great. And then we have a call with Beverly. We're going to work on some of these on energetic levels, some of these cords, we have an entanglement in our families and in our communities. More fun stuff. Gosh, recipes, it's all here. And I encourage people to get on Facebook if you're not in there. Some people use, it takes a little time for us to get it together, but some people use a different identity for privacy, so you can always make a Facebook with a different identity so you can feel private. But it's definitely a good place to get information and join us for exercises and Soulful Sundays and stuff like that. Oh boy, good one, guys. Mark, you're awesome. Thank you, Brentis. We'll see you guys soon. We'll be back on the call next week. Ciao.
Yeah, thanks, everyone.
Thanks, Brett.
Bye.